All right, welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. And we're back to this format.
Yeah, this format means not sitting in the same room. The pandemic, no, it's not over. It's never really been over. And in fact, it's so not over, it's now in your house.
It is. Super in my house.
Yeah.
So we have found out that one of my twins has it. We found that out this morning, and by midday, everyone was kind of like, "I'm not feeling too good either." So yeah. We got lunch. Wife and I are just kind of feeling crummy. Of course, I kind of generally always feel crummy this time of year because I'm just worn out from another just exhausting outdoor season that I'm trying to get off the ground. So we all went and got tested today. That was fun.
Good family outing to get nasal swabs, right?
Yeah, it's fun. If you're an adult, you go up to the drive-through at like a CVS and they just give you the thing and you do it yourself. And there's like a little drop box and you do it yourself. And so like, cool. You have to sit there in the car and the guy is like on like the phone thing talking to you in the little drive thru, like, all right, now push it in all the way back until it stops, until it just hits stuff. And then we're going to leave it for 10 seconds. And you're just like, ah, miserable.
Yeah. That seems like a really fun time. I'm glad that you got to experience that. I'm also really glad that we actually postponed recording last night, because that makes things a little bit easier knowing now that
yeah,
potentially wasn't coming into the infestation house.
Yeah, that worked out for us, didn't it?
Well, I guess just for me so far. So I that maybe sounds a little selfish. So you guys are feeling mostly okay. It sounds like some of your kids are feeling the ill effects of it at the moment more than anyone else.
Yeah, Jack and Lena, sick as a dog, throwing up like crazy. I feel crummy. I mean, it's day one, essentially, for me. I didn't really have any symptoms yesterday. Outside of, again, I've felt tired for 3 weeks now, so that part's not new.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. And both you and your wife are vaccinated, so that will hopefully lessen the effects of everything for you.
I mean, I got the Pfizer. My wife got the Johnson & Johnson. So one of us is really vaccinated. The other one,
Yeah. You're FDA approved.
Yeah, that's right.
Your wife has some janky off-brand Johnson & Johnson one. Yeah.
It was just baby shampoo.
Well, I'm glad.
No tears.
It's better than potentially a deworming medication, right?
For like a horse or something? Was it? Yeah. Is that what they're using? Is it a horse? Or it's some kind of like livestock dewormer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What Mississippi were consuming?
Something you shouldn't be, that's for sure. So steer clear of that. If I catch you anywhere near any of the farmer's shops up here in Lebanon, I'm gonna have to report you to the closest authorities.
What was like the fish tank cleaner? Wasn't that the other one people were we were sucking back?
Why not? Anything, just, you know.
We do have a show for you that's not all about the perils of being stuck in a house with a bunch of people with the coronavirus. We're 2 weeks into the season. Mm-hmm. Week two was good. Obviously, nothing was beaten week one. It was such an amazing start to the season, but some solid matches, some marquee matches. We have already some teams that we expected to be really good that are proving that. We have some teams that we didn't feel that way about that are also doing good. Looking at you, West Ham and Brighton, a relegation candidate that I had. And then there's teams like United, which looked really good last week. And then they played what on paper was a worse opponent and got a 1-1 draw.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way sometimes these things fall. Early days in the Premier League too, right? Like, we're talking about, you know, potentially West Ham sitting at the top of the table,
Right.
It could be a very different story in 3 or 4 weeks time, right? It may not be, but you know, at this point in the season, it's so hard to like cast really long shadows at this point of the year and make any predictions about where things are going to land then. But no, I mean, there are definitely some surprises that are out there, and there are some, you know, teams that are performing about what you'd expect out of them. So where do you want to kick things off, you know, today? Any particular game sticking out in your mind?
I mean, I think we need to, while they're there, give them honors. So let's go West Ham out the gate. They're technically top of the table as they get that big win against 10-man Leicester on Monday afternoon here in the mm-hmm. States. They kind of, you know, the first note I wrote down is like they've just picked up right where they left off. Like they had that really strong finish to the season, where we were talking like David Moyes, should this guy be the manager of the year? Like they're clicking, everything's working out really well. You know, they fell just short of Champions League spots. They were like legitimately in contention for those mm-hmm. Down the stretch, but had a great finish, come out of the gates hot. There's still chances that they're going to make a few moves. It sounds like they're most likely going to take Kurt Zouma on, either on loan or a permanent deal. I forget. They're just trying to work out personal terms right now, but that sounds like that's happening. And they might bring in, you know, another piece to kind of go with their attack.
They're flying high. They've picked up, like you were saying, right where they left off at the end of last campaign. They're like a really enjoyable, likable side at the moment. And it's 2 weeks in a row that they posted 4 goals on their side of the result. You know, 8 goals in 2 outings is obviously pretty solid. Mikel Antonio, a guy who I continuously forget is actually English, becomes their, at least equaled their all-time record Premier League goal scoring mark. So that's a huge momentum kind of boost for them early in the season too. Everything's just kind of going right for West Ham right now. And, you know, you mentioned the guys like Kurt Zouma that they're bringing in. And, you know, what's really impressive in the way that they're going about their business right now is that they're doing it and being competitive without like going out and breaking the bank whenever they do dip their toes into the transfer market. They've been incredibly savvy since Moyes has got his hands on the team with how they built their squad out. And, you know, you look at some of the squads that are around them right now, obviously they're, you know, far more expensively built, but even the teams that they should be, you know, more in the neck of the woods of, like Spurs or, you know, Everton, they've still spent considerably less than them over the last few years as they build mm-hmm. out their squads. And I don't know, it's just it's a really impressive mark. And we're almost getting back to that point now where it's like, this is what Sir Alex saw in David Moyes when he wanted him to take over the reins at Manchester United. Like he's doing sensible stuff and getting results out of that. And yeah, it's a really impressive feat that obviously everyone's giving them praise right now, but I think it's undersold how well they do to just kind of game the system and really continue to improve while doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. And you know, I mentioned, you know, another move they might make. They were hoping, you know, one of the guys that spurred things on at the end of last year was bringing on Jesse Lingard on loan. They were looking to make that happen again, or make that actually happen in a more permanent situation. It looks like that's probably not going to happen. So like they're looking at some other alternatives, but still like another area where they're looking to improve. So like they're looking to spend more, but you're right. Like we've seen this happen before with like, I mean, Everton's the best example that you pointed out. Like we saw them a couple years ago go through many windows where they kept throwing a lot of money at the situation.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
just didn't work at all. And then it just ended up kind of screwing them over.
Yeah, I mean, Manchester United is probably the club that probably gets like lambasted the most for being like the most wasteful spender in the league with, you know, how they throw around their cash. But Everton was just spending stupid money for a while on people that just repeatedly didn't work out for them. And, you know, they've gotten some good ones in there for sure.
Sure. But then they spent like $30 million on that Klassen dude that did nothing.
Yeah, literally. Like, he's probably like playing in a second division somewhere at this point. But yeah, I mean, West Ham have just defied the odds and have gone out and, you know, the team that we've most kind of wondered, like, hey, are they going to be the next side to really challenge, you know, the big side supremacy in Leicester? You know, this almost set the expectations differently for the rest of the campaign. Like, Leicester's here, you know, and West Ham are quite a bit higher than them. And again, it's early days, and the red card certainly contributes to that entire equation. But no, it's a good showing for West Ham, and yeah, it's one that Leicester will probably be licking their wounds over for a while.
Leicester City, are they going to need to make a move? Like, are they poised to? I was going to say poised to do what they've done the past 2 years, but what they've done the past 2 years is contend up till the very end and then crater. So I mean, they might be poised for that again, but that's not really ideal.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing they're facing too is just how many of their players from that era are now starting to kind of like dip off. You know, Vardy is becoming, he's having increasing amounts of injury issues. He's getting up there in years. He can only take so many more self-inflicted punches to the head before, you know, he finally knocks any remaining sense out of it. But even, you know, guys in the back, you know, Wes Morgan's now gone. Robert Huth's getting up there in years. You know, Mahrez is obviously gone. You know, there are pieces of this team that, while they've replaced a lot of them well, you know, we need to see them live up to that potential for them to continue challenging in the manner that they had the last few years.
Switching over to the match, obviously I watched the most and enjoyed the most over the weekend. Chelsea going to the Emirates, getting the win over Arsenal, an Arsenal side that is struggling not only to just maintain some sort of identity out on the pitch, but also like they're dealing with injury issues, they're dealing with, you know, coronavirus issues, they're dealing with a manager who there is mixed feelings about, not just in the fan base and the punditry base, but also it sounds like within Arsenal, there's a lot of people that, you know, either members of the squad and of the front office and elsewhere that maybe have kind of given up on what Arteta can bring to the table.
Yeah, things are not going very well in the red half of North London at the moment. This match obviously being the like big punctuation for how bad things are kind of going right now. Two losses on the campaign for Arteta so far out of two matches obviously is not a good position for him to find himself in, especially given that people were already speculating on his future before the first ball was kicked this campaign. But man, like 2-0 is such a flattering scoreline to Arsenal in this match, because like those two goals came early and like it felt like everyone went back to sleep after like the first half hour of that match, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, from the Chelsea standpoint, you're almost kind of like, guys, we should have absolutely buried, like we should have scored like three or four. I mean, Lukaku had that one that Leno saved in the second. Just, I mean, good on him. That was a great save as he's trying to show that he's a better keeper than the guy they just brought in for $30 million that has been relegated twice in the past two seasons in Aaron Ramsdale. But Chelsea could have like scored several more goals in that match.
Oh, it felt like, you know, a 5-0 scoreline would have felt accurate for the way that they bossed the game. I mean, Arsenal never really had a foothold. Even by the time Aubameyang, you know, saw the pitch, it really felt like it was more of like a courtesy substitution. Like, yeah, let's get him out there and get him some actual game reps so that maybe he'll be effective if we don't end up selling him. It's just... Yeah, you talked earlier about, you know, them grasping for an identity, and it feels like Arteta, while he's convinced himself he's giving them one, the guy just clearly seems out of his depth. And, you know,
yeah, I mean,
he's good at taking instruction from Pep Guardiola and making that happen within the squad that Pep was picking. But yeah, it doesn't seem like he's got that same magic touch.
It was, I mean, did you see his pre-match comments where he was like just talking about, hey, you know, we got the goals we're setting, you know, we may not, you know, we may not reach them when we think we're going to reach them, but we got to just keep going for them and we got to have belief. And it's like, yeah, I think it was the Men in Blazers or someone basically like referred to it as like Spanish Ted Lasso. Like, it was just a little too like overly broad and optimistic, that, and like, I don't know, yeah, that just paints a picture of like, dude, you're just treading water here, aren't you?
I mean, treading water, it almost seems like a kind way of describing the way Arteta is currently surviving the situation that Arsenal find themselves in. Chelsea, you mentioned earlier Lukaku getting off the mark. How did you feel as a guy that, you know, you've seen Lukaku in and out of this shirt before? Does it feel like, oh, this time is it's coming together? Because to me, at least, as an outsider who has no vested interest and would actually probably prefer it doesn't, Lukaku looked like unplayable at the weekend.
There's a lot of like commentary that I don't know how comfortable I feel with some of it, of like, oh, he left a boy and became a man and all and came back. And it's like, no, like he left somewhere to actually like flourish where Chelsea was really just not, we just weren't going to allow for that time to happen, at least not on our watch, not on, you know, not within our squad. So, you know, it made sense. Like, he had to go other places. He had to go other places to become the player that he is. And now that he is, it's not that Chelsea now deem him valuable and didn't before. It's that like, there's the bar and the standard is just set so high for a club like Chelsea, where, you know, you're expected to compete in every competition, every single season, that we couldn't wait around for that. We couldn't take a chance. We needed a guy that was already at that level. And he's come in at that level and just, I mean, he had only one half of preseason under his belt before the start over the weekend. Like, that's all he had done all preseason. And that wasn't even with us, you know? And so he was able to come in and hit the ground running immediately. And it's awesome to see. It's exciting. Like, it's exciting to see, like, okay, that's how good he looked with like having only really been in training for like 10 days.
Yeah.
Like, imagine like mid season hits and him and Havertz and Mason and all these guys are just gelling, and they get one another, and they're picking up, you know, the runs better. Because I mean, you saw, I think you even made a comment about it on Twitter, like, Lukaku, he is also like, he's been there for like a minute and he's already like kind of getting mad of like, hey guys, like, I need the service, like, let's get this ball into me here.
Yeah,
give me the ball.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot left to work out in that relationship, but it's, I mean, I'll be honest, I'd like for it to not all accumulate that way, because when you start saying all those things in succession and you think about it clicking, especially that you've got a manager in there now that seems maybe a little bit more capable of milking that out of the players at his disposal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit frightening prospect. And yeah, I mean, it's part of the reason why I felt pretty confident in picking them as the champions this season in our annual preview, right? It's a really dangerous looking team. And man, if you guys get it all worked out and Lukaku can stay fit and be the player that we know he can be, this is this could be quite the season to watch unfold.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't we don't even know what this final roster is even going to look like. There's those rumors here early this week of one, if not two, potential moves that Chelsea's going to make. One, to bring in another center back option. And another, who is it from Atletico Madrid? Is blanking out here. Sal bringing him in on loan because Atletico is just trying to like purge guys from the team right now. And so they might bring him. So then they, I mean, you, then you just have a wealth of talent to you can work from. I mean, people were joking about how in this match, you know, Chelsea had were in the position to bring in fresh off the bench late in the match N'Golo Kanté to just go on and just terrorize the midfield.
Yeah, and Christian Pulisic wasn't even available because COVID, right? So it's,
yeah, he was over at our house, so he's got COVID.
Well, that explains
actually, that's where we got it, I think, maybe.
Just sharing a Yingling with Chris.
That's right. I was gonna do two straws, and he was like, "Why you don't want to do straws with beer?" So we just like, "All right, we'll just take turns."
Sip from the same can. It's cool. Let's move on from Chelsea. They're not the only side that's flying high that we expected to be. Another one that's up there doing what we thought they might. Liverpool.
Yeah, they've looked strong. Obviously, they've not really been challenged.
No.
Yet they've played Norwich and Burnley.
I mean, that's
Norwich that now, yeah, like Norwich now sits, I believe, at 0 goals scored, 9 conceded.
Yeah,
and like something like that, and then they play a Burnley side that no one was. I mean, what those were both of us. Did we both have both of them as relegation
candidates? I believe we did.
So that's what they've had so far. Now they'll play Chelsea on Saturday in what's already looking like a big match for the season. So they're going to get that first big test.
I mean, here's the thing with this Liverpool side, like the way that they fell apart at the end of last campaign makes you really kind of question where they are now. Like, is this the team that we remembered from 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, that were world beaters, that were Champions League winners, that were running away with the league title? Or is this just a vestige of that squad? And have they lost some of that magic, through the course of the pandemic, through, you know, the squad growing a little stale? I don't know, but I mean, the way that Chelsea are playing right now, you couldn't really ask for a better side for them to stack up against, right? Like, and I'm sure we'll get to City here in a moment, but they're not playing as sharply as Chelsea have, at least over the first 2 games of the season. So
definitely the best challenge you're going to get this early in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, for one, I'm really looking forward to it. But at the same time, I remain a little skeptical about what's going on at Liverpool at the moment.
You know, I think the most disturbing thing, though, that's going on at Liverpool at the moment is LASIK eye surgery.
Yeah.
And Klopp got LASIK eye surgery, apparently. And him without glasses is just I'm just not okay with it.
No, it's uncomfortable. It's like when someone who has a beard for a really long time gets rid of the beard and you're like, oh, who are you? Like, I've seen pictures. I've seen pictures of you without your beard, and I remember you not having one. And it's really, I don't even like the idea of it. Like, you without a beard now makes me severely uncomfortable.
So I first started growing this beard. I think once my wife and I got engaged. Once I was like, hey, I've put in a good shift. I can just go ahead and just do whatever I want now. She's already agreed to marry me. I can stop trying. I started growing a beard around then. And then, like, I don't know, a year or two into our marriage. It was before Jack was born. It was, or actually it might have been right when he was like first born. So a couple years into our marriage, I just on a whim for some reason was like, you know what? I'm just going to shave it. And my wife at that point had like never been a huge fan of the beard. Like she doesn't like it. Like when it scratches her, like when like, you know, she tries to kiss me and stuff like that. And so I walked out of the bathroom and she was like, oh no, you got to grow that back.
Like, sorry, I can't just put it back on. That's not how this
works.
That's
going to be a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. We're sorry for the listeners who caught that very X-rated moment where Jeremy talked about his and his wife's very close relationship.
Turns out we occasionally, as a married couple, will kiss.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to bleep this stuff out of the episode.
We already got the explicit rating, right?
So yeah, this is every bit as uncomfortable as Klopp without glasses. I'll tell you that much.
What about me, no beard and no glasses?
Oh god, now I'm just feeling like I've been violated in some way. let's move beyond the top clubs and the weirdness of Klopp without glasses and you without a beard or glasses, and talk about some of these other sides that are just within striking distance but are performing at a relatively high level. We'll start with a team we mentioned a little bit earlier on. Manchester United looked fantastic in that opening fixture, and then this week out go down to Southampton and have to scrap out a late draw to make it all work out. Are we all back to now believing that our babyface assassin is actually just a pretender again? Is that what's going on now?
I don't know. It's such a weird thing to. This has been United for how many years now? Where we just can't. We literally can't decide if they're back or not back, and they themselves can't decide if they're back or not back.
It's a little bit weird, but no, I think. I mean, we're going to see any team have their ups and downs throughout the course of the season, especially early on. They're still trying to sort out all these new names that are showing up in their roster after they made some high profile acquisitions into their team. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's too early to write him off. I think we're certainly probably jumping the gun there a bit. I don't still remain a guy who's unconvinced fully by what Ole offers, but I don't know. I still think that they're a team to watch this campaign.
How much of Ole is like the success they have, especially they have had, especially quite recently, and even including week one, how much of the quote-unquote success is really just comes down to Bruno Fernandes just has really good matches?
I mean, I wonder about that constantly. Spurs were supposedly in the running to sign him for a little while, and you know, once United jump into the race, you know you're out of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is for a club that doesn't have a billionaire owner who's willing to just evaporate and cleanse all of his dirty money through his club. But I think often about like, what if Bruno Fernandes had come to Tottenham, and I watch how he has single-handedly like won them matches on so many occasions and just conjures goals out of nothing. Yeah, I do wonder about that a lot. And you know, it's games where like when he's clicking, and he seems to click most of the time, but when he's clicking and Pogba's clicking, like this United side's unstoppable, right? But then, you know, if you get a match where one of the two of them isn't on their game or at the top level, then you get, you know, the Ole side that's really no different than the David Moyes side that we were, you know, making fun of all those years ago.
I mean, and so this was an example. He did not have a good match, and therefore they drop points thanks to a Fred own goal, a mediocre performance by a lot of guys like Bruno and Martial. You get this draw against a Southampton side that is not predicted to do much, is betting in a lot of like, they're a mixed bag of like old dudes. And then like, you got, Livramento, which is a kid who was in Chelsea's academy up until this summer, that they actually got on like a, I was kind of surprised. I think they only paid like $5 million for the kid. He's a right back. So that he obviously had some depth chart issues at Chelsea as far as his future there. But this is, I mean, that kid played really well in this match, and he's like, for a $5 million signing, like, look out for that one. That one might be like the deal of the off season. Cause that might be one of the pieces that carries them. And he's cost them virtually nothing.
You always like those guys that cost you virtually nothing.
Yeah. Oh, those are good. Oh, the ones that literally cost you nothing, those are the best.
They usually are. Over into the other half of Manchester. Manchester City get back to winning ways with a demolishing of Norwich City, 5-0 win. Just step away from the City stuff for a moment and go to the Norwich side, although they're technically a City too. Josh Sargent made his debut in this match, which is great in some respects. Not so great in that he got pummeled in his opening one. But then they turned around, had a midweek cup fixture. He had a brace and an assist today, which is a fantastic start to life at a new club, particularly in England. So
they took out all their aggression on Bournemouth and won 6-0.
Yeah, take that, you stupid cherries. But no, City really just dispatched of Norwich in the weekend and looked like the dominating side that could challenge for a title that we all kind of expected to show up against Spurs and did not. Norwich find themselves in quite the hole after their opening two fixtures.
I mean, they're a side that literally struggle to hide the fact that they are well aware of the fact that they have little to no shot of staying up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was listening to their manager's comments after, I think it was the opener, and he pretty much was just like, we're gonna do what we can do and all. Like, okay, but like, just say it, like, you guys are just gonna soak up some sun here in the Premier League and head on home here at the end of the season.
Yeah, it'll be a nice little foray into the top flight, and then we'll go back to where we belong.
Other matches?
Spurs got a second win. That makes me happy. Yeah, if nothing else. They went to Wolves, Nuno's old stomping ground, and got a hard-fought and actually kind of disappointing 1-0 win. For as good as they looked against City, they looked really sloppy and kind of, you know, a team without their talisman, even though Harry Kane did make a late game.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're burying the lead here. Harry Kane, not only in the 18, but actually got into the match.
Yeah. And, you know, surprise, surprise, he came in and was fairly impactful, for a guy who's only trained for about a week now. The best part about him being in the match was just the back and forth between the Spurs and Wolves supporters. Wolves fans started off with Harry Kane, he wants to fuck off. And then the Spurs supporters replied with, he's one of their own. And then once he actually came on, the Wolves fans chanted, there's only one greedy bastard. And then he said he'll be a Mank in the morning. And the Spurs fans retorted with, Harry Kane, he's worth more than Wolves. And I love when you can hear the supporter banter in matches. Like, I feel like that's something that we really have missed out on over the last couple of years, is like the call and reply chanting that you can sometimes hear in games. And you could actually hear this on the match broadcast, which was like hands down one of the most entertaining aspects of actually what was a pretty boring game. Dele Alli penalty being the difference, but it does make me really question, like, two wins on the season. I'm biased here, but do you feel like Spurs are pretenders or contenders? Like, is this a real thing, or are they just overperforming at the moment?
Because I think at this point, Kane stays. I think ultimately they will be contenders. To what degree, I don't know. But I think there's still going to live out a bit of an awkwardness here at the beginning of the season, which so far so good. They got you know, 6 points on the spin in this kind of will he, won't he, Harry Kane part. Now, obviously, I think we're going to hit that deadline. Kane's going to stay. And then it's going to probably be another like match or two before he fully gets himself back in to the swing of things and everything's feeling good again, at least for the remainder of the season. So, I think ultimately, if that happens, if Harry stays, I think you guys will be around. I speaking of Wolves, though, the hot rumor now is you guys might want to get Traore.
Yeah, Diamond Traore and all of his muscly, oily skin into our Spurs kit. We'll just squeeze him in with a shoehorn. I would be okay. That would really make me feel like a big club, because I feel like we'd be signing him just so we wouldn't have to play against him anymore. Like, as much for what we would be like getting in the equation. I like Traore. Like, he's an exciting player to watch. You know, he's got that burst of speed. He's obviously so strong.
He played well in this match too.
He did. But here's the thing about Traore, and my wife will love this, and I'll have to give her credit because she's the one who harps on it the most. But he's good, but his final product, I feel like, is lacking a lot of the time.
Not there at all.
Yeah. And, you know, whether it's the final ball across or a finish on his own, he had some opportunities that you felt like he could have done better. And, you know, maybe, you know, when you're a bit of a one-man island, you know, that's something a little bit, you know, that you're facing a little bit more pressure. But I don't know. Wolves look good. Raul Jimenez was back. He looked pretty solid in general. You know, for a guy who's having to limit his actual contact with his head, I thought he played pretty fearlessly. And I don't know, Spurs feel like it felt like it was a lucky match for them to get all 3 points.
That's fair. I guess that's a fair sentiment. Was there any other match you wanted to hit?
The only other one I think is worthy of mention: Leeds United getting a 2-2 draw with Everton you know, getting spanked around by United in the opening match. That is a decent result for them. I'm sure they'll be disappointed in general with, you know, giving away 2 goals at home. But, you know, hey, for a side that got undone in the first match, that's not too bad a progress on their front. But no, otherwise, you know, I think the only two matches we've not touched on: Villa got a 2-0 win over Newcastle. Newcastle, 2 losses to start the season. And then Brighton getting a 2-0 win over Watford. So
they stay on.
There's your Premier League weekend in a nutshell.
We always like to take week 2 of the season, because generally everybody's played at least one home and one away match, to kind of go through kits. This is where we like to talk fashion, which is something that half of us are really into.
Yeah. That's you, right?
Yes. Hugely into fashion.
Mm.
Trying to make hooded fishing shirts in right now, as you can see. So, you know,
I can't see it because it's not camo. So
there you go. I don't wear. I've always never understood that. Like, I buy, like, you know, fishing apparel, and like there's a bunch that's camo, and like I don't think that's actually necessary. I'm fishing. Like, I'm not. I don't.
Does that help,
like,
I'm you not, with fish?
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know much about.
What do I need to look like, all shimmery and shiny, so I look like the top of the water? So like the fish are just like, oh, yeah, it's the top of the water. There's nothing. There's nothing there
to worry about there.
Yep.
There you go.
So I don't know. I think we forgot to break down how we wanted to do this. I picked out like some that I really liked and some that I thought were garbage.
I did the same thing.
Okay, I was just making sure. We've done this every year, so I figured we both kind of had the idea of what we wanted to do, but we didn't talk this one through. So I was
not nine like, seasons in. You can see how good our planning has really improved.
We just assume we don't have to, and
exactly.
You know, sometimes that works out.
Yeah. Do we want to do this like we do winners and wankers, and start with the bad, so that way we can end with all the praise?
Okay, let's do that. I'll start with the bad one. The Chelsea home kit sucks.
Oh, I'm glad you went with that one. I contemplated throwing it in mine, but didn't include it because I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
So two problems I have with it. One, the pattern design is just not like that wavy kind of, you know, trippy checkerboardy kind of look is just kind of meh.
Feels like I'm in a fun house.
Yeah, it's whatever. And then I just, it's, I have certain pet peeves about Chelsea kits in general, where like, if you do this, I'm generally not going to like it. Now, most Chelsea fans, there's a big thing about if you put red in the kit, we're not going to like it because we're the blue side. We're not a red side.
Sure.
I generally like think that the red normally is a great accent color to go with like a nice royal blue jersey. So I don't have that problem. Yellow, on the other hand, I don't like yellow on my Chelsea kits. And they got that little side stripe of yellow with the blue. And I just, yeah, just, it sucks. I don't like
it. Yeah, the swoosh is yellow too on it, right? Like, I think it's, I don't know.
Their away kit is just all yellow, which I'm not excited about either.
No, it's, yeah, with the giant three on there too. It's kind of the reverse pinstripes. Yeah.
Everyone was joking about the joke in the offseason about the away kit is that it was yellow and black because we were just wanting to make Erling Haaland feel welcome when he showed up.
I mean, it literally looks like a Dortmund kit. Like that's what it looks like. Yeah. That one is pretty bad. I'm going to throw out one of my bad ones too. And, I felt like there were a deluge of bad ones this year. Like there were a lot of bad ones to choose from.
Yeah.
I'm just going to include Nike's Brighton home kit. Simply because I'm questioning if it's even new. Like I didn't look it up, but it's so similar to what they've had the last few years that I just felt like why even say that you've had a new kit?
Yeah, it's like, did you guys even, are you going MLS rules here and you're just changing one kit?
Maybe. Yeah, that's how it used to be for everyone, right? But
right, yeah. Yeah, not you anyone. Generally, your kit would, each kit would last two seasons and you'd kind of alternate.
Yeah.
That one was just pretty uninspiring. United's third kit is like this really bold blue, which I know they've been doing a lot of like blue third and away kits lately, but like this just, I don't know. I think that's just a little overplayed. B, I think it was almost too strong. It's too strong of a blue to where like it literally looks like it should be like a Chelsea or Everton kit. And then like my third beef that I have with United, although there is a reason for it, is they always want to go to this other color for their thirds.
Mm-hmm.
But the other color that they should go with is their original color, which is green.
Yeah, it's been a while since they've done the green and yellow, like Manchester original color call out there. Blue is actually one of their kind of traditional away colors. So it's not like that out of left field.
Yeah, it's almost the what I was talking about with Chelsea fans, how like they get really particular about red getting thrown into their side. It's like United's a red side. So like, I don't like when they wear these like big, bold, like, straight up blue kits.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But going to like the whole like Newton Heath color scheme, like I don't think you're gonna see that for a while just because of what that all means now. Mm-hmm. Is like the Newton Heath green and yellow is like the official colors of the Glazer out sect of the United supporters.
No better way to reclaim those back than to just, you know, make a kit that just makes it yours. Yeah. Gotta fight fire with fire there a little bit, Glazers. I've got one that I really, you know, people will probably give me my like bias smack for this, but I really dislike Liverpool's home kits this year from Nike. The red with the orange accents.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a really good move. I'm with you there.
Yeah,
didn't super hate it. It's not on my list, but yeah, I found that just that choice very odd.
Yeah, and like the 45 degree pinstripes are also a little weird. Like they just it's kind of odd. But the red with the orange, it just didn't really feel well for me. It felt kind of icky.
The other one that I put in there, simply kind of what you were talking about with like the Brighton one, like it just seems so played out and just not well done, was the Wolves home kit. It's just this very bland, blocky, kind of bizarre patterned yellow kit. Like, yeah, it's just super meh.
Yeah, and that's that Castore brand that's kind of popped out of the scene for the first time. I didn't like know that they existed at all until this year when they grabbed the Wolves and Newcastle kits, and I'm sure like half the championship or something.
Is that an English based?
It is. I did some homework and looked that up. They're a Manchester based brand.
Okay. It's
relatively new and up and coming. They had another one from Newcastle, that I had in my bad ones as well. We see a couple of these out here and they look like bad shirts. And like the Newcastle one just has way too much stuff going on it. Like everywhere there's just weird stuff happening on it. So
I don't like what Newcastle's done the last couple seasons where they've taken their vertical stripes and like just mesh them into just like two.
Yeah.
Like there's not like there's just giant like just there's just now just one giant black stripe in the center and that's all the stripes.
Yeah, it worked when there were like no other emblems on the shirt at all, but now that there's all this other stuff, it just doesn't seem to do the right thing. So any other bad ones you want to make note of before we move into the good and praiseworthy kits that are out there?
No, I'm trying to think if I've seen Chelsea's third kit. I don't think I have, but so far they're 0-2 in my book.
I don't think they've released any of the Nike third kits yet. I think those are still behind the veil of secrecy that's been set out for us all.
Well, I mean, we do have to mention, we already talked about last week, the city third kit from Puma.
I did rank mine as I normally do, and since we didn't do rankings, I've mostly just been ignoring that. But yeah, the worst kit in the league this year is hands down Puma's Manchester City third kit with the script that says, you know, Manchester City across the chest in case you've forgotten who the team is. And of course, you know, there's no crest for anyone to kiss in case that's something that, you know, is like commonplace in the sport. There's nothing for you to get at.
Terrible.
I guess.
All right, let's go to the ones we like, the ones that actually look good, the ones that if it's our club, we might actually want to purchase.
Yeah.
I'll start with the Spurs third kit, otherwise known as the Spurs Jimi Hendrix kit.
Yeah, it's actually the second kit. I thought it was the third kit as well. But I've described it as oil slick on a puddle. I think, you know, it's got that translucent kind of multicolor thing going on with it. Maybe it's a lava lamp. I don't know.
Well, because it does look a lot like Adidas's Sounders Hendrix kit that they put out.
Oh, yeah. That was
very similar style to them.
Oh, the new Ajax one. Yeah.
Ajax has it too?
They have a new Jimi Hendrix kit. Not Jimi Hendrix, excuse me, Bob Marley.
Okay. Yeah. But like the Sounders have that Jimi Hendrix one.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that.
Very similar color schemes.
Yeah. The only thing I dislike about the Spurs one, and I do have this one on my list too, is that the back panel where like the numbers and name go is just solid. It's like a dark navy or whatever the base blackish kind of color is.
I feel and like most of those are that way. When they get super creative totally on the front, they're just always just a blank slate on the back.
Yeah, it's for like legibility for numbers and TV viewing for sure, but they're doing the same thing on the front of the shirt with the sponsor logo and it looks just fine. So I don't know, but whatever. Otherwise, I really dig it. And while I was a little unsure about it, now I kind of want to spend a bunch of money on it.
What else you got?
I'll just go ahead and throw this one in here. I love Spurs when they go simple and they have a like literally bare bones white kit this year with just a swoosh and the crest and the sponsor logos. And I love a clean kit like that and just can't get past it. Just, this is my one super biased pick and it's definitely going here because it's super plain.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, I thought I normally love a clean kit. I actually thought theirs was almost a little too plain.
It's a little too MLS for you.
Yeah, a little too nothing going on here.
Yeah.
Another one I really liked was the Crystal Palace third kit that is people are dubbing the Blackburn.
Oh, kit. The light blue and white have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like a retro look or something like that from a much older, you know, years ago. They wore something like that. I just think it looks really good, really classic. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good color scheme anyways. It's different. I think it's a cool thing to do as like a, you know, just a one-off kind of homage.
Yeah, why not? I bagged on Liverpool's home kit earlier. I really dig their away kit. That's kind of that tan with the teal and like kind of neon red.
It's that tan like cream color.
Yeah. It works so well together. That like three color combination.
That collar.
It's a good clean looking shirt. Really dig that. You got any other good ones?
That one was on my list. I did, you know, we talked about Wolves home kit sucked. Their third kit. Similar vibe to almost like what's going on with the Spurs kit. But I just thought it was really good looking. I think it's like the gold speckle kit or something like that, where it's got these like gold kind of flake within like this navy.
Yeah, it almost looks like a fuzzy screen on a TV to a certain extent.
Yeah, a little bit. I thought that was a good one.
I really, really like Hummel's Everton third kit, the all blackout kit with that red sash across it. Just really clean. They even went with all black sponsor logos on it, which just love when a company is willing to hide themselves a little bit just to make the shirt look that much better.
Yeah, no, I left that one off because like I love it, but it's so jarring how like non-Everton it is.
Oh yeah, it does not. It feels like it's a weird like River Plate kit that like escaped from South America and ran all the way to Liverpool, England.
Yeah, it's definitely went off menu on that one.
Striking, if nothing else. Any other shirts you want to call attention to?
Nope, that's it.
The only other thing I had in my notes here, and it's Watford. They have a selection of Kelme kits, and I don't really have much of an opinion about them. I don't hate them. I don't love them, but I'm just happy to see that Kelme is still like a brand that is alive. Like I thought for sure that like they were dead, and seeing them back, like, who knows what brand from my childhood may get resurrected now, like knowing that other ones have survived to this point.
All right, is someone going to rock like a Diadora?
Yeah, there we go. Haven't seen Diadora on any English teams in a while. Give me that, please. I think that brings us to the end of this week's show and our tradition of ending with winners and wankers. So after we've done the good with the good kits, let's go back to the bad with the wankers. Give me your wanker this week.
Potentially the one that you may have picked as well, because wow, what an incident. Nice fans.
Oh man, I was really close to picking this one. I have another good one too, but this one was narrowly narrowly missed out on my wanker too.
So threw some bottles at Dimitri Payet. He freaked out, threw him back into the stands. And then at that point, the fans basically just stormed the pitch.
Yeah.
It was like Malice at the Palace all over again. Like it was like fans coming out trying to square off with players. And much like the Malice at the Palace losing all of those standoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out
common men cannot fight against, you know, fully fit professional athletes. You could be smaller or larger than them and it really doesn't matter. Like it doesn't.
Yeah. Old 0% body fat's gonna beat you every time.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the really crummy part about that entire situation, who was Nice playing against? Was it Marseille? Bordeaux?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Regardless, as Payet's team in Marseille, they left the pitch, and by Ligue 1 rules, the team that refuses to take the field takes the loss. And so the Nice fans who stormed the pitch basically won the match for their team because the other team refused to come back out and face a bunch of unruly fans. And it's just a totally ass backwards situation where you're seeing the team that did the right thing punished and the team that did the wrong thing be directly rewarded for that.
Yeah, kind of a messed up situation there, but yeah, that was it was wow, what a wild scene.
Always good when the fans come out on the pitch to fight the players.
Yep. Who is your wanker?
My wanker, I went with a very broad wanker in this one. There are a lot of probably more specific people that we could blame, but I'm just going with modern football in general, and the reason for that is we saw the death of a club this week. Chievo Verona in Italy, a team that very recently was participating in the Europa League, narrowly missed out on a Champions League spot after losing a playoff position for it a couple of years ago, back in 2006. That club is now dead. They are completely ceased to exist at this point. They had gone into administration, had been so far into debt that like they became an unpurchasable asset, and wow. Ultimately no one wanted to purchase them. No one showed up in Verona to purchase them when they were at auction, and the club has died. And it's just another sad sign of the pollution that the ever never ending pile of money that keeps getting pushed into the sport has kind of done. And you know, obviously there are owners who are at fault here. There are leagues who have allowed this to happen. There are agents and maybe even players who have some fault in this situation. But man, it's just it's always disheartening when you see a team, especially in a city the size of Verona, lose its club because it's just been mismanaged. Sad days. Clubs die every day in the United States. Ted Westervelt will let you know that. And we're very desensitized to it over here. But it is odd when you see like 80-year-old institutions go under because like people can't manage to keep their finances in line.
Have we lost a club in Verona, Kentucky yet?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Give me your winner this week.
My winner, I just want to take the opportunity to shout out a fellow podcaster of ours, our guy Nick Suberling, announcing today that he's stepping down from Cincinnati Soccer Talk. Those guys have been rocking it strong over there since day one with FC Cincinnati, and just credit to them and what they built. And then Nick's, you know, kind of one of the big key founding members to like now finally step away. So I know that was probably a tough decision for him, but I just wanted to give my little hat tip to him and wish him the best.
Yeah. Awesome. I was going to shout them out at the end anyway. Also Rob Pierce, who's been the editor of CST for the last couple of years, is also stepping away from Cincinnati Soccer Talk. So two really big departures for an organization that has been, honestly, a cornerstone of everything that's kind of built up here in Cincinnati the last few years. They have fostered an incredible, engaged community of fans and listeners, and given a really cool outlet to the fan voice here in Cincinnati over the last few years as this movement has really caught fire and maybe it's been extinguished a little bit the last year or so. But it's sad to see Nick stepping away from something he's worked so hard on over the years. But I know that he's likely to find, some good stuff in his future as well, too. And they've given me a home to write at over the last few years. It's been super appreciated. And Nick was the one who, you know, almost immediately reached out when that was an opportunity that was available to me. So thanks to Nick for everything he's done for Cincinnati Soccer over the last couple of years. And hopefully he finds something fun here in the near future that's in a different pasture.
Or just, you know, and finally actually just get to sit back and enjoy the soccer, which sometimes like that's what you just need to do for a while.
Sometimes it's nice to just uncheck that box and roll back into fandom life.
Good times. Good time. Your winner.
My winner this week, I went with Diego Costa for just an absolute amazing, amazing line. He moved back to a Brazilian club this week. And when being introduced to the media and to the fans, he pulled this line out and said, "If my mother was on the pitch and I had to beat her to win, I would. I'm going to do everything to win." And when you think about that, that's like a pretty boring quote in its own right, right? Like, oh,
it's like a thing that like you guys throw out that whole like mentality thing, and it's like, ah, okay, yeah, whatever, guy.
But you know, with Diego Costa, that he would literally like headbutt his mother to the floor, like if that's what it meant to win. Like the thing that was awesome about that line is me envisioning him like punching his mom, like. Sorry, mom. Gotta do this. Like I literally, the flood of images that filled my brain when I read that quote for the first time were amazing. Like I love the idea of Diego Costa just bodying his mom up, like on a breakaway, like a 50-50 shoulder shoulder challenge, and just murdering her with like a low shoulder. She's probably a very nice lady, but
probably I
would
raise such a lovely son.
Destroyer.
I guess on that note, we're done.
Yeah. When you talk about crushing people's mothers, that's about the time where you need to check
get
out. Ready
to close it out.
Yeah. If you want to get a hold of us, you can. Jeremy Lance is going to be doing nothing for the next 10 to 14 days. He's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond. You can get a hold of me too. I'll be doing nothing as well, even without COVID.
You at least get to leave your house.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's nice to not have to do that.
It's nice to not have to do it.
It's when you can't.
It's when you literally can't. It's when it's like I'm stuck here, just me and these four walls. Man. Get some outdoor time. I'll walk around the backyard, sit on the back patio for a little bit. But
I'll have to come leave a little care package on your step for you.
There you go.
Please send bourbon.
I got plenty of that. May need to just go to the high proof stuff to just kill off any germs.
There you go. Alcohol kills pretty much anything. All right, folks, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, folks. Bye.